Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for School for Startups Radio, where we talk all things small business and entrepreneurship. Now here's your host, the guy that believes that entrepreneurship is not about creativity, risk, or passion, Jim Beach.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to another exciting edition of School for Startups Radio here on Business Radio X. Hope you had a wonderful weekend and have a great week planned here coming up with lots of small business profit. I want to pitch my event coming this Saturday. As always, as we've been doing for the last 7 weeks, we are broadcasting from the World Trade Center downtown, live in 20 languages this weekend. The topic is how to buy a business with zero money. My partner Chris Hanks is going to do his thing on buying a business with revenue of $1 million with zero profit or zero money down. So how can you do that? It's an amazing lecture. He works backwards through it. It's one of the coolest things he does. So I really want to encourage you to come down and see that. As always, it's sponsored by Wells Fargo and UPS and the Epicenter and Frannet and theselfemployed.com. And, oh, of course, we got Sue Rieger, who's doing Translate Your World live, 20 languages around the world. We had 350 people, Kevin, last weekend listening from, I think, from Denmark or something. We blew it out in Denmark. You're famous in Denmark? So cool being famous in Denmark.
Are you going to go release a CD or something over there?
Yeah, we're going to do a world tour of Denmark.
Denmark, just sing it and sing about School for Startups Radio?
Exactly. Uh-huh.
Awesome.
Yeah. So anyway, we had that. So next weekend is a great topic. Come and be a part of that. Again, we appreciate our sponsors tremendously, especially Wells Fargo and UPS for making that happen. And then directly from there last Saturday, I went to an amazing event. I would like to really throw out a word to Mitch Schimler, who has put together the Entrepreneurship Hall of Fame. They had their first induction, live induction ceremony. They had, listen to who they had there, Kevin. They had Truett Cathy, the man who started
Chick-fil-A.
Yeah. They had Fred DeLuca.
Subway.
Yep. They have Dave Anderson, Famous Dave Barbecue.
Oh, okay, yes.
Sarah Blankley.
Wait, that's the that clothing.
The girlfriend, or no, I mean the underclothing girl.
Yeah, well, what is it? I don't know.
Spanx.
Her story is amazing. I love her story. We
billionaire.
Have that on here.
Yeah, billionaire. The Harris Rosen, guy who owns every hotel room in Orlando except for the Disney hotel rooms. It was an amazing event, and so I really want to congratulate Mitch. He'll be on the show here soon. For the success of that event, it was absolutely fantastic. I met some great people and had a lot of fun. And Mitch, you did a great job on that. Today we have a great guest, Kevin, but I can't remember who it is. I wrote his name down and put it somewhere, but I can't find it anywhere in front of me. I know he's a memory expert, I think, but I can't remember. Roger, how are you?
I'm doing great. Jim, I never get to hear jokes like that.
How many times have you heard that one before?
I don't know. Only about a few thousand or so.
Exactly. I have a friend who's an actuary, and every time I see him, he's like, "You're on time." And I go, "What are the odds of that?" And I order food. I get a Sprite, and he goes, "You know, what are the odds of that?" And it just, you know. You know, it's
wow, you sound like you're great fun at parties, Jim.
Well, you know, someone's got to be the ass of the party, right? Every party's got to have an ass, right? So anyway, Roger Sipe is the name, by the way, and the book is Train Your Brain for Success, and it's got some amazing stuff in here, some tricks I'm really excited to share with you. But Roger, before we do that, I heard you used to be a salesperson, and you worked at a company that had 400 million salespeople, and you were number one. Is that true?
Well, you're close, actually. I appreciate you asking, and I do appreciate the kudos. No, I mean, you had mentioned that you're from what I've learned a little bit about your listeners. I think it's really important to understand that people need to be listening to somebody who's done it. And yeah, I've actually been an independent business person myself since about age 18. I started out working with a company out of Nashville when I was a college student. Yeah, I sold educational books door to door. Your numbers are a little bit off, but yeah, out of 200,000 students that worked in that company over its 150-year history, I was in the top 10 all time. So that was pretty good. And then over the last 15 years, we've built a company called Freedom Personal Development. And that's been really awesome. I've gotten to work with small business people and entrepreneurs all over the country for the last 15 years. And that's kind of the work that Train Your Brain for Success grew out of. It's why we were asked to put that book out in the first place.
It's so interesting that you talk about the selling of books. The again, back at this event that I was on Saturday night, the man I sat next to has run three publicly traded franchise companies. His name is Jerry Darnell, and he sold books and said it was the best experience of his life. One of my best friends is a guy named Brian Johnson, just published a book. And I'm going to send you a copy of it, Roger. It's Dale Carnegie and Ayn Rand have a mysterious love child who ends up selling books. It's really something that's popped up in my life a lot recently. I think I'm going to make my 15-year-old son go sell books, because everyone who seems to do it seems to really benefit from it.
Yeah, it was certainly the most formative business experience of my life, and it really laid the platform for being able to open and build and then run a successful nationwide multi-million-dollar company. I mean, every small business owner understands that sales is just the lifeblood of your business. There's an awful lot of people who are great at operations and an awful lot of people who are great at accounting, but if you can't go out and make the business happen, then, you know, that's going to be trouble for any business that you're starting, which I actually think is maybe the most important thing. I appreciate you making reference to the memory section of Train Your Brain for Success. But I think that the main thing for a business person to understand is that everything from the conception of their business to how focused they are in running it to what kind of results that they get, it all starts in your mind and in your brain. And that's such an important thing to understand, that if you're not taking care of that 6 inches between your ears, it's a lot more difficult to take care of the external results of your business. So I really appreciate the opportunity to be here today.
Well, we love that you're here. In the introduction of the book, you talk about the mental factors, you call them, the things that you can do to sort of start training your brain. Let's go through those because I found them particularly fascinating. Number one, about the breadcrumbs, the clues. Tell us about that.
Yes. Yes, you're talking about the concept of how success leaves clues. Man, to me, this is one of the most fundamental things about running a successful business, especially if you're starting one up out of nothing like we did with Freedom Personal Development. You know, there's a lot of ways to reinvent the wheel, and it works a lot better, I've found, if you can understand a pattern that works. The whole idea of success leaves clues means that accomplishing any result that we want to get, whether it's in our business or in our finances or in our physical health for that matter, it's not a function of luck or magic nearly as much as it's a function of how we think and then what we do with that. You know, it's really common out there in the masses when people see a successful entrepreneur, when they see a successful business or a successful salesperson or a successful anybody, it's really easy for somebody that doesn't know to go, oh, well, they were just lucky. Well, anybody that's listening to a show like this understands that running a small business, that opening a business and growing it to wherever they want to grow it to, it takes a lot of work. It's not luck. It's a matter of thinking correctly and then making good decisions with that. See, the thing, what success leaves clues means is that those things, how you think and then what you do, that's actually stuff that can be modeled and copied from other people. You know, I'm a huge fan of the idea of, if you want to get from point A to point B in your business, one of the most efficient ways to do that is you find somebody who's at point B now and then kind of started from your point A. You can almost always find a role model. I mean, there's so many great books out there and so many great events. Jim, I love listening to you talk about the events that you go to, because that's how you learn to be successful in anything, is you leverage the knowledge of other people. That's what I mean when I say that success leaves clues.
All right. What you see is what you get.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite things to talk about. The whole concept of what you see is what you get. And this speaks a lot to how your mind really works. You know, most of the time when people hear someone say that what you see is what you get, what the connotation is that nothing is hidden, that you can take a situation or a person at face value. What we're talking about here is more about what we'll call the power of visualization. Some people think about it in terms of the law of attraction. I just call it what you see is what you get, and it basically means that the pictures that you see in your mind tend to be the results that you get. I think a good analogy of this, did either one of you guys spend much time watching the Olympics this past summer?
Oh, yeah.
I did not. The Olympic movement bothers me. I have a philosophical problem with it, but anyway.
You have a philosophical issue with the Olympics?
Yes. Happiness, joy, celebration, all of those things. Yes. Uh-huh.
You're going to try all of that, Jim?
Camaraderie. Goodwill,
achievement, inspiration,
it's all bad.
Living out their dream,
it's all bad.
All horrible.
The only part, Roger, of the Olympics that I liked is at the opening ceremony when they had all of those patients in beds, like they had the 1,000 hospital beds out there depicting the Great Britain hospital, you know, the nationalized hospital system. Do you remember that part? That was the only part that I appreciated.
Interesting. I thought that was the weirdest part of the opening ceremonies, as good as they were.
Well, I'm trying to be ironic. I guess it's not working.
We're off track a little bit here. No, of course, who doesn't love the Olympics?
But I mean, certainly understand your analogy, though, that I think where you're going to get us back on track before I totally destroy your time here is that athletes can envision their success, and that's why they're successful, is they envision it in the future. Is that what you're talking about?
That's exactly what I'm talking about. And you'll see, the Olympics I always use is because it's a very clear example, and you get a lot of like footage of the athletes doing it. If you watch athletes before they perform, you can almost like see it happening. What they're visualizing in their mind is the end result. They're visualizing the achievement of that perfect routine or the score that they need or whatever it might be. And the reason they do that is because they know it works. Athletes have made literally an extensive science and really a cottage industry out of this whole concept of learning how to visualize in a way that really works. And what we've found is that that concept that works so well in sports is a major key to being successful in business as well. I've noticed in my work with entrepreneurs and with sales professionals and even with parents that when you can see what you want to have happen as clearly as possible, the more clearly you can picture the results that you're looking to get, the more likely you are to build a business that delivers the performance that produces those results. So what you see is what you get. The pictures that you see in your mind tend to be the results that you get in your life. Those, it's not just a sports thing. It's a business thing, and it's a life thing at the same time. Does that make sense?
It does, of course. I love it. How detailed does your picture need to be? Is it a Matisse impressionist work, or is this a lot more precise than that? When you visualize the future, how much is it 1080 HD?
I would suggest that the more vivid the image can be, the more effective it's going to be. But more importantly than that, you know, there's a lot of books out there, everything from Think and Grow Rich to The Secret. My book talks about it a little bit as well. The more vivid you can make the image, the better it's going to work, the more clearly your mind can get a hold of it, because that's a lot of what your subconscious mind does, is it sees images and then moves towards them. The clearer an image is in your mind, the more easily your subconscious can go, ooh, I want to go get that. One of the things that, I don't know if we'll have time to talk about it here today, I kind of hope that we do, is that our brains actually come wired with some default settings that can prevent us from moving in the direction that we want to go. Clear images and clear goals of what you want to have accomplished is one of the major keys to kind of taking the brakes off of your brain and helping you move forward in the most focused and energetic manner possible. I actually think, though, even more important than the clarity of the image, because I know a lot of entrepreneurs are like, man, I just want to make a difference, and I want to make money, and I've got this great product, and they've got their thing. It's important for it to be clear, and I think it's even more important that people are fired up and passionate about what they're doing. You know, we do a lot of great work on how a business person or an athlete or anybody can set goals effectively, and the number one characteristic of an effective goal is that it's got to be meaningful to you. Certainly writing it down and visualizing it in a certain way is really, really helpful. And then the more passionate somebody is about their goals, the quicker they're going to get there.
What you see is what you look for.
Oh, yeah, okay, so now we're getting into the brain science stuff here. This is one of my favorite things, and I don't want to bore the listeners with a bunch of academic science stuff because they're all about getting results, but this is actually one that I think is really important to understand. There's a part of our brains. It's called the reticular activating system. If you've gotten through the book, Jim, I know that you've read about this. Is this what you're talking about?
Exactly.
Yeah. This is part of our brains. The term reticular activating system in and of itself is not super important, but what it does and how it influences a business person's behavior, I think, is super important. Basically, what this part of the brain does is it acts as a filter on what you notice versus what you don't notice. The kind of the classic example that I think most people are familiar with is that you decide you're going to buy a certain kind of car. You decide you're going to buy a red BMW, and then all of a sudden you look around and it's like, oh my gosh, there's red BMWs all over the place. I never noticed that before, right?
Yep.
Right. It's when you guys might not get this as strongly as some of my clients do, but when women find out that they're going to have a baby for the first time. It's funny how they all talk about how they start noticing pregnant people and babies all over the place, and there's a lot of other examples that you could use. It's not like those stimuli weren't there before. It's not like you decided, hey, I'm gonna get a red BMW, and then all of a sudden everybody went out and bought one. The information was in your environment the entire time. In a scenario like I'm describing, you just never flipped on the switch to start noticing that in your environment. So the whole idea of what you see is what you look for, I think it's really important to understand that as business people, we're actually conditioning our minds to notice what we want our minds to notice. And here's the thing. If you go back to the idea of what you see is what you get, you combine these last two specifically. The whole idea of what you see is what you get, and then you combine it with what you see is what you look for. Man, the choices that we make about what we put our focuses on any given day, really makes a huge difference in the outcomes that we get as business people, right? Like if a business person on any given day, if you want to find bad news, you can find it, right?
Sure, I can.
Definitely.
Anybody who's uninspired and angered by the Olympics can definitely find bad news. I know you were just kidding about that. And then here's the interesting thing, though. Like, on any given day, if you want to find good news, you can find that, too. And it's real. I love this exercise. When I'm in front of a live audience, I get to do a lot of speaking to business and corporate groups. It's a wonderful exercise to do because I'll just take the group and ask them, okay, how many of you have at least one problem? And, of course, everybody's hands go up. Everybody's got at least one problem, you know, something that they wish was different. And then I ask the group, okay, now how many of you have at least one thing in your life that you're genuinely thankful for? And it's really amazing to see the difference in the quality of experience that people have just by shifting their focus even a little bit. Like, I notice when people shift their focus from what they're upset, angry, and stressed out about to what they're grateful, thankful, and enthused about, it literally produces like a different physiology in the room. People sit up straighter, their hands go up quicker, smiles start breaking out. And then I think that what's important to understand about this whole idea of how your thinking creates your life is any good salesperson will know this, and I think any good business development person will know this, that the thinking – like we have a choice on a moment by moment basis that if you're focusing on the stuff that you're irritated by, it's going to create a specific thinking pattern and a specific physiology centered around anger, frustration, resentment, etc. You shift your focus onto what you're grateful for or excited about, it creates a different thinking pattern centered around, like we said, gratitude, joy, enthusiasm, excitement, more positive emotions. Any salesperson or any business person will probably tell you that they know that they'll, based on the thinking that they bring to an interaction with a customer, that they'll get different results based on the thinking that's going on inside of their own head. It's really amazing how people and entire organizations can pick up on the thought patterns of one person in a position of leadership or in a position of persuasion. So, I mean, I think, you know, I so appreciate the opportunity to talk with you guys about how your thinking creates your results, because sometimes I know business people feel like they don't necessarily have time for that because it can feel a little just, I don't know, sort of airy-fairy. It's like stuff that Oprah talks about. But it really is one of the most practical things I think that a business person can do. When you get your mind right, it's really amazing how that sends ripple effects out and creates better results in a business.
I really agree with everything you're talking about, and I think that it carries through just at so many levels. While you were just talking about that, I thought about Jack Welch and the way he likes to fire the bottom 10%. And what are your thoughts on that? It seems like you wanted to jump at that comment.
Yeah, I think that that's actually a super smart idea. And not because, you know, I mean, some people might look at that and go, well, that's, you know, big business, cold-hearted bastards just focusing on the bottom line. And I actually think it's a great service to the organization and to the individuals. And I'll tell you why I think that making sure – this relates to something that we talk about pretty extensively in the book and in the training programs that we offer. It's because who you surround yourself with has a major influence on your thinking and on the quality of your life. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I tell my kids that all the time.
Okay, I was actually going to ask this of you, Jack, because I don't know this. Jim, you have kids.
I have three. I have a 15 and a 13 and then a 2-year-old.
Oh, perfect. Okay. So your 15-year-old, is that a son or a daughter?
It's a boy.
It's a boy. Okay. I love asking this question of parents of teenagers. So if your son said, hey, Dad, I'd like to go out. I'd like to go do something on a Friday evening or whatever it was, what would be the first couple questions that you would ask?
Well, of course, who, with, where,
okay, you can,
when.
You can stop right there. Like, listen to the first thing. And this is parent. If it's not the first question, it's always the second question that parents of a teenager will ask is, who are you going out with?
Sure.
And the reason for that is I always, in a live group setting, this is always funny, because I'll ask, why do you want – I'll ask you, why is it so important? You just said that it's a big deal for you and your kids. To you, why is it so important that you know – why do you want to know who your kids are going out with?
Well, I want to make sure that he's going out with a really mature 18-year-old that has a really good fake ID so that they can drive fast and get home in time for curfew at 2 a.m. Well, isn't that how you're supposed to think of this?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
No, I mean, all of us just want our kids to be around positive influences,
yeah,
and kids that we know have the same rules and things like that. You know, my kids are growing up in a 1950 Mayberry type environment, you know, with very, very strict conservative Southern values. So, you know, they're raised in a very old-fashioned way.
Yeah, and you know what? It doesn't matter if you're raising kids in a Mayberry RFD environment or downtown Manhattan. Every parent is highly concerned about who their kids are spending time with, and the reason is because you know that your kids are going to become like those other kids, at least for a short period of time.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And my favorite answer that I ever got to the question, why do you want to know who your kids are hanging out with? This dad who had a 16-year-old son, he goes, well, it helps me get ready for what kind of trouble my kid's going to get into. I thought was pretty good.
But see, that's a horrible answer. Why is the dad sending it out with any of those people? You know, my point is it's still your kid. He's not 21 yet. I don't think you're done at 18. I think it's 21 or 25 or something. Why let the kid go out?
Here's what I'm saying, Jim. What I'm saying is that parents know this about kids. You're concerned about who they hang out with because you know that the kid is going to become like the people they're surrounded by. My point is that same influence that we are influenced by who we're surrounded by, that's still going on. It's one of the best business strategies for advancing your career is be super careful about who you hang out with. Brian Tracy, who wrote an endorsement for my book, taught me this, that picking the wrong group of people to associate with all by itself can totally kill your career. If somebody's starting up a company, getting the right people on the bus is critically important because you're so influenced by the people that, man, when you start a business, you know, it's like, I talk about this with my clients a lot, it's a lot like a marriage. You spend a lot of time and devote a lot of energy to that person, and you better pick the right ones. So getting back to your question, I don't mean to jump all over you, I just get really passionate about this. Your thing about Jack Welch and firing the bottom 10% of the people, the reason why I tend to agree with that is because it just builds up the quality over time that evolves into a culture of people that are winning. And then winners want to be around other winners. And that's how a company gains momentum, man. You know, people pay a lot of lip service to the idea that, you know, people are our most important asset. Well, it's not just lip service. That's a bottom line fact. So I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No. It's your time. Your time. There used to be a restaurant in Atlanta. I think it's still here. And it was incredibly expensive, very highbrow. The waiter would come out and offer the first of six vodka appetizers, and you selected. Each person selected, and then he had four chilled appetizers and each person selected, and then there were four warm appetizers and each person selected, and then there was the soup and then the entree and then dessert, and then the waiter, and the entire time his hands were held behind his back, he was in no way writing anything down, and then he would go, ma'am, you're having this drink, this cold appetizer, this hot appetizer, this soup, this entree, and this dessert, sir, blah, 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 ma'am, and go through each patron and get it 100% right. I saw one guy do it for 26 people. Talk about memory and how to improve your memory.
Certainly. Well, what you're describing there, first of all, is simply one way. It's one very clear and very impressive example of how your memory can really impact your bottom line success. I'm imagining that in the situation that you're describing, that somebody who can do that for 26 people, you're blown away. Like, it's almost like you're getting a show with dinner, and you probably tip that guy pretty well.
Oh, I mean, the people there were making, you know, $1,000 tips a night, you know, probably just off one table. It was a corporate place, and, you know, we had 26 corporate people in there on a Japanese government, you know, account in the 1980s. I bet he got a $2,000 tip that night.
Oh, I can imagine that. And so as a business person, any of your listeners can take that and extrapolate that out into their business. Your memory, there's a bazillion ways that your ability or inability to recall information can affect the bottom line. The most popular one that I hear is the whole issue of remembering names. You kind of made a little joke about it at the beginning of our interview here. But you know what? And it's kind of funny because everybody says, everybody's had the experience of, you know, you meet somebody, a client, a potential client, a prospect, or just somebody you're meeting at a party, and, you know, you shake their hand and get their name, and then 5 seconds later, you can't remember their name. And it happens so often that people can chuckle about it, but, you know, that simple little slip of the mind can cost a business person thousands of dollars. You know, if your waiter that you're describing, if he gets that information wrong, he's not getting that $2,000 tip.
That's right.
If he has to keep asking, I mean, here's the thing. He's going to get some kind of tip, but if he has to write it down, he's not maximizing his bottom line. And if he gets it wrong, tips go away. Well, guess what? Day-to-day, business people are confronted with the same thing. We've got tons of information that we need to keep up with, and the ability to recall all of it is critical to our success. Being able to remember somebody's name, being able to remember what they need, being able to remember how you served them in the past, what went well about that, what needed to be improved about that. And sometimes we actually need to do it on the fly. There are hundreds of ways that we get to use our memory as a tool. That's why we included it as a major section of Train Your Brain for Success.
All right, well, give me some tips. Make my memory better.
Yeah. Okay, sure. So the first thing that I would recommend, if you're talking about remembering people's names, the first one is really, really simple. Let me back up. Have you ever had the experience, Jim, where you met somebody, shook their hand, got their name, and then 5 seconds later couldn't recall their name?
Oh, of course.
Of course you have. So there's a very, very simple, I call it a cure-all for that technique. That actually happens not because you're dumb or you're broken. Actually, in your case, it might happen because you're dumb.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue that. Yeah, so. I'm not going to argue with you. Just keep on going. Yeah, we Kevin and I accepted that as a given what, 6 months ago?
Yeah, about then.
No.
We came to the consensus.
You guys will love this. That actually happens because you're too smart. It happens because your brain just moves so quickly that it's really easy to have somebody walking up to you, especially as a business person. Because you're always thinking 6 or 7 steps ahead in the conversation, and where might this go? It's a really easy trap to fall into that somebody's walking up and saying, "Hi, I'm Roger Sipe," and you're halfway through your conversation with that person. So number one, if you want to improve your memory for names, it's vital that you just slow your brain down and just listen for like 3 seconds. Make sure you're hearing it correctly. Number two tip that I always give people is that it's very helpful to repeat somebody's name back to them immediately upon meeting them. Now, not in like a weird stalker way. You don't want to, you know, when somebody says, "Hi, I'm Kevin," it's not a good idea to go, "Kevin, Kevin, 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 Kevin," because that's bizarre.
I love it when people do that. I guess I'm weird.
Well, they're just reading the tattoo on your arm.
Yes, right. That could be. No, but I mean, when somebody says, "Kevin, hi, I'm Kevin," it's a different, it's very different experience for your brain doing what most people do, which is, "Hi, I'm Roger," versus somebody says, "Hi, I'm Kevin," and you go, "Kevin, pleasure to meet you, Kevin." Once or twice right off the bat. Now, those are super simple techniques, something that's a little bit more advanced. Fundamentally, what we teach in Train Your Brain for Success and in our workshops is a specific process for how to remember anything. It's called the mental file folder system. But one version of it for remembering names is if you have the ability to make some kind of a visual image out of somebody's name, if you can create a picture for it in your mind, that's actually very helpful. Some names, it's really easy. Jim Beach is actually a pretty easy one to create an image of. If you can picture a gym, like a gymnasium, on a beach, bingo. That's a very easy image to create. You know, if somebody's name is Crystal or Matt or Rose or Sandy, many names, if you're just paying attention, are already very visual. Sometimes you have to use your imagination a little bit, but if you can create a visual image out of a person's name, that's one of the tips, that's one of the things that we teach people how to do on purpose in our workshops, and it's also covered in Train Your Brain for Success.
Well, what's the mental image for Kevin?
For Kevin? Okay, it's going to sound goofy in an interview, but whenever I meet somebody named Kevin, I picture his forehead all caved in. Cave in, Kevin.
Okay,
that
works.
Close enough. Yeah, here's the funny thing about it. Like, as I'm listening to it in this format, you know, I mean, we teach full 8-hour workshops all over the world on how to do this.
Uh-huh.
And when you just hear it kind of barfed out in a radio interview, it can sound a little goofy. But you know what? I'm okay with that. As you're improving your memory, the more you can harness the visual part of your brain, the better you're going to do.
You wouldn't be okay if you knew right now that Kevin was crying and he's slumped in his chair. He got hit with a bat about 10 years ago, Roger, right in the middle of the forehead, and it left a big mark. He's got this big divot.
And well, then it would be very easy to picture that.
Yeah, so he took that hard, man.
I'm sure I can tell.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, that's a good one. You know, it's sort of like I... when I was a young kid, I moved to Japan and I learned all of the kanji, the 2,000 little pictograms that are their words. And so it's very, very similar to that. We always came up with silly little mnemonic things to remember all of them. So, okay, that's easy. I like that. I like Kevin. And so, you know, what would be cool over time is that you could develop an entire picture library for all of the strange names, you know, like Kevin, that don't have a clear, you know, connotated picture along with it, that all those people would use the same picture. Is that true, or does that work, or does that make it more confusing to have that many Kevins with Kevin heads?
No, that's one of the principles that we teach, is if you're trying to create a visual image out of somebody's name, once you got one,
keep it.
Once you got an image for Kevin, you use, anytime you meet somebody named Kevin, you use the same image. And when you mentioned the whole issue of creating a database in your mind, it's one of the things that we do teach people how to do in our workshops, and we've actually created a database online that actually has pictures as suggestions as people are doing that. You can find links to that and tons of other resources at the end of each chapter of Train Your Brain for Success. It's one of the neat things about the book is that it gives you online access to tons of great tools that will help do exactly what you're talking about doing.
Okay. You know, I am concerned about these children that we were talking about. I'm trying to help them read and all of that. And so I took a test. I'm a 44, Roger, but right now I'm reading like a 47-year-old. What do you think of that?
I don't understand what you mean.
You don't get it? I'm bummed.
You're 44 and you're reading like a... Are you referring to how I talk about how everybody reads like a sixth grader?
Let's talk about that.
Yeah, so the issue of reading is actually a pretty important thing for a business person just because there's so much information that needs to get kept up on. Is that what you were talking about, Jim? I think I totally missed your joke.
I was trying to segue into that, yes, but obviously it didn't work. You know, you know, I'm not a professional stand-up comedian like you are with 10 years of stage presence and stuff like that. So I dropped the ball there. We'll edit that part out, Roger. Don't worry. That part, we'll just edit all that crap right on out.
That's all right.
Yeah.
No, it is one of the things that I've learned over the last few years is that more and more people just have to be up on their game. There's so much learning that a business person needs to do that it can really be kind of overwhelming between learning about your field and learning how to grow a business and then learning in the field of personal development. You know, there's just a lot going on. And then the problem that you're alluding to is that most adults, they do, we read the same way that we did in sixth grade. People get a little upset sometimes when I tell them that you read like a sixth grader. I'm not saying that they're not smarter than a sixth grader, but fundamentally the last time anybody received any training typically on how to read effectively was somewhere around sixth, seventh, eighth grade. And the concepts have become more complex and harder to understand, but we're still using the same techniques that we did, just reading one word at a time like we did in sixth grade. The good news about that is, and this is the first section of Train Your Brain for Success, is devoted to learning how does one read most effectively. You know, most people read, most people have the ability, by just understanding how their eyes and brain work a little bit, most people have the ability to read at least 2 to 3 times as fast as they do without losing any comprehension. So it's a super, I do appreciate you bringing up the reading issue because it's a super valuable skill for people to be able to develop.
All right, give us one trick. Give us your best reading trick.
Yep, best reading trick that I would say is we teach in our workshops the use of what's called a pace card. You can do it with like a little 3x5 card or just a piece of paper. Simplest trick in the book is as you're reading, simply take a piece of paper and cover up the line that you just read. It prevents your eyes from going backwards. Many of us, the reason why we read a lot slower than we'd like to is because we have this habit unconsciously of reading everything 2 or sometimes even 3 times. When you eliminate the ability to do that by taking glitter, do you guys get what I just said? Like taking a piece of paper and as you're reading, you take a piece of paper or an index card or a bookmark or something and just move it down the page so that you cut off the ability to go back and read everything twice. It's amazing how much more engaging the reading experience is because your brain subconsciously goes, oh, I can't go back. I better pay attention the first time. And your brain actually likes the challenge of doing that. You'll oftentimes I see people read 2 to 3 times as fast and without any loss of comprehension. And here's the thing about that. What that can do for somebody's confidence is unbelievable to me. I've had a couple of experiences with salespeople where, you know, most salespeople they understand that reading is an important habit to develop, but they feel like they're slow, they don't like it, it's stressful, it's boring. And just implementing this one technique, I think about my friend Joe, he sells windows and doors here in Wisconsin where I live. And I taught him this one little technique, and then I saw him at another meeting 3 weeks later, and his reading speed had quadrupled in just 3 weeks of just doing this one thing that I taught, that I just mentioned. Seems like such a simple thing. And it was really interesting to look at him because he just felt better in front of people. He felt more confident talking about world events, and it was taking him a lot less time to absorb those types of things.
I'm trying this with my iPad right now, and it's not working right. Is there an iPad app that you sell that makes the paper that you understand what I'm getting here to, Roger?
Yeah, no. How do you do it with an iPad? You actually can do it with an iPad. Like, you just need a bigger piece of paper, actually. You could do it with a piece of paper or with an iPad. I probably shouldn't admit this, that I don't know this right off the bat. As you're reading on an iPad, you can scroll, right?
No, you scroll sideways. You turn the page. It's a turning the page experience. And so it's actually hard. You have a whole room full of people now trying to read with half their iPad covered up or half a computer covered up. No, it's not working for any of us right now because this might be a book-related thing. We'll have to have you experiment and get back to us on the electronic way to hide half the page without looking like an idiot.
Well, I get a lot of people who read on a Kindle, and it works exactly okay. The same way with a Kindle as it does with a book. But with an iPad, you're looking at a little bit more. I will have to get back to you on that, Jim.
Well, my wife is a Kindler, so we will test her about it and see what she has to say. But we need to move on, though, Roger, off the reading. I have goals in life. I've accomplished I had accomplished all of my goals, and so I'm sort of in a quest for new goals at the moment. Not all my goals. You know, some of them, like live to 84, that one I didn't accomplish yet.
Still working it out.
Yeah, we don't know. Yeah, but anyway, like the other ones I did, I wanted to send the passport back to Miami to get the extra stuffer pages because I had filled up the whole thing, you know. I wanted that. And so anyway, let's talk about some goals. What are your thoughts on goals?
Well, number one is I think that goals are the first thing that somebody needs to make their brain work effectively. You heard me mention earlier that our brains come pre-programmed with what I call some unhelpful default settings.
Yeah, I was waiting to get back to that.
Yeah, this is a really good time to talk about this, actually. We talked earlier a little bit about how you asked me about the mental factors of success. Those are a couple of ways in which I talk about how your mind literally creates your life. The whole idea that success leaves clues, that your focus determines your reality, that what you see is what you get. Those are just some of the specific ways in which your mind literally creates your life, the experience that you have internally, as well as the results that you get externally. Well, the trouble with our brains is that we come pre-wired with some I call them default settings or tendencies of your brain that are excellent survival mechanisms if you live in the wilderness, but then for getting along in our world and really being, doing, having the things that we want to be, do, and have, they're really detrimental. One of them is that your brain tends to overemphasize negative and underemphasize the positive.
Can I stop you right there? Let me stop you right
please.
There. You're friends with Joe Abraham, right?
I am.
And did you read his Entrepreneurial DNA book?
I have.
Okay, I hate to put you on the spot like this, but part of the Entrepreneurial DNA thing is that one of the quadrants, and I think it's the builder quadrant in the upper left, those personalities forget the past pain that they have been through and just keep going on with life and focus on the future so much that they don't ever remember the past at all, and that their spouses have to remind them, hey, don't you remember the living hell that we went through when you tried that business 2.5 years ago? It was, you remember that part of the book?
Yep.
Can you talk about that and how it ties in with exactly what you're referring to with goals, though?
This is a great question, actually, and the way that I would respond to that, what you're describing is how there are certain personality types, certain what Joe Abraham calls entrepreneurial DNAs, that what you're describing, they kind of, for one reason or another, have, I like to call it a short memory for injury. They can easily forget their failures, focus on their successes, and that tends to produce positive things in business. What I would suggest on that is that the ability to do that is extremely valuable, and in the vast majority of cases, it's an acquired skill. It's something that maybe they have a natural tendency to do, but almost all of those people reinforce their ability to focus on the positive and forget about the negative. Even for those people, I read a great book recently. It's called Get Out of Your Own Way. It's by Dr. Robert K. Cooper. I would definitely recommend it, where he's talking about, like, he works with people that you're describing, the Richard Bransons of the world, the people who are always out there on the cutting edge and aren't worried about failure. And he's talking, like, he talks about how if you look closely at what those people do and how they think and how they live, they work every day on that tendency. They do things, some of them do it unconsciously, but they all have things that they do in how they run their lives and their business that quiet down the part of their brain that wants to focus on the negative. For everybody, the natural tendency, the default setting, is to overemphasize negative and underemphasize positive. You're not a slave to this tendency, but it exists in all of us. It's a great survival mechanism, like I said, if you live in the wilderness. You know, your brain is always, natural tendency is it's always scanning the environment for things that are threats to it, which is really good if there are actually are grizzly bears that want to eat you. But nowadays, the tendency that we have to deal with is that your brain is always looking for something to worry about, especially as a business person. It's always looking for something to worry about, and if it can't find something, it's likely to make something up, and that can cause problems. Your brain also has a tendency to get easily distracted with whatever is urgent at the expense of what's important. Entrepreneurs are classic being awesome at putting out fires. And oftentimes we'll reach a point, and Joe talks about how to avoid this a lot, is they'll often reach a point in their business where all they're doing is putting out fires, and they're working 18 hours a day and feel like they're not actually making any progress. Well, it's because it's such an easy trap to get distracted by this, you want to be putting together a marketing campaign that's going to bring millions of dollars through the door. And then somebody comes up and goes, hey, this one customer has a minor problem, and your brain has this tendency to focus on that minor problem just because it's right in front of you. We also have a tendency, another default setting that we've got, is that we tend to crave safety over progress. We want to stay in the same place because it's safer than getting out there where things are risky. So here's what I'm saying. All of these tendencies are detrimental to a business person. You asked about goals. What I would say about goals is that having goals that give you energy, having goals that are properly structured and properly focused on, to me, it's the number one tool that a business person has for offsetting those default settings and making your brain actually work for you instead of against you.
How are we supposed to use our time? How is time meant to be used? What are your thoughts on time management? And do you know what time it is?
It's getting to be time to wrap up this call pretty soon. Is what you might be getting at.
No, let's talk about time. Time use.
Yeah. Time usage is such a tricky thing because it's so easy to get wrapped up in the day-to-day minutia. My overall advice, and this is covered in depth in Train Your Brain for Success, is you've got to learn how to create a schedule as a business person that gives you space. You got to be able to create a schedule that gives you space to pursue the things that are really important and meaningful for your business, and at the same time, maintain your energy levels. I've found that if a person allows the day-to-day minutiae of their business to consume their entire life, that it will. A business person has to take control of that. In Train Your Brain for Success, there's a process that we teach called the two-hour solution, where we teach people a specific process of how to carve out time for themselves that literally creates almost an extra day per week in terms of productive time. So how is time meant to be used? It's meant to be used in the pursuit of the things that are truly most important to us. And we have to understand that one of our natural tendencies is to fall into the trap of only dealing with things that are urgent.
Yeah, I was thinking about myself while you were going through all of that. I try to do all, and I call it production time. I try to schedule everything so that I can produce it on Saturday or Sunday, and mm-hmm. then during the week dispense it. You know, if I know I have a proposal due next Thursday, I know I have to get it done Sunday night, or it won't get done. And that, you know, then I do it that way. What do you think of that? Setting aside, is that okay? Or am I
think that
doomed?
That is what I'm hearing you say, Jim, is that you do this on a, how often do you do that?
Well, every week. Every week is scheduled. I never promise anything this week. It's always next week so that I can produce it over the weekend.
Yep, what you're actually doing is a version of the two-hour solution. The fundamental process of the two-hour solution is to carve out time sometime between the end of one work week and the beginning of the next to really what you're actually doing there is what we describe in the book as mentally creating the next week of your life. Like you sit down and go, okay, what am I doing? Why am I doing it? And you literally think your way through the upcoming week. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's pretty much true. That's true.
Yeah, you might have different, and how do you find that works for you?
At the end of the week, strangely, almost the entire list is done.
Yeah, that's what I would have guessed. Most people don't do that, Jim. What you're describing, Stephen Covey talks about how everything man-made is created twice. It's created once in our minds and then again in our external reality. And for a business person, this is especially true. You create your business in your mind, and then it manifests in the world, in the marketplace. And a lot of, I am shocked at how many executives don't do what you're talking about, which is why we were asked by our publisher to make sure that we teach the two-hour solution in the book. There's a very specific process, and it's a very simple process to go through during that time that you carve out for yourself that literally leaves a person going, okay, I know what I'm doing this week, and I realize that I have all the time that I need for the things that are most important.
Roger, we are about to run out of time. You come across to me as 100% genuine. I believe everything you say. You alluded to the book, The Secret. I know some people who have read that book and tell me that I need to read it. I find those people to be as full of shit as a human being could be. And so when you alluded to The Secret, I have to ask, what do you think of that book and the principles in it?
I think it's I actually think it's a great book. I think it's a good read. I think it's interesting. And it's actually a fair amount of it is actually grounded in science. The reason that I recommend not only reading The Secret is because it's easy. Here's the thing about that particular book. I actually would recommend that you pick it up and check it out. And then I would also understand that it's easily that what they talk about there is the law of attraction. You heard me talk about how what you see is what you get.
Yep.
Like, do you get the idea that the pictures that you see in your mind tend to be the results that you get?
Sure.
Yeah, okay. So the big difference between where I'm coming from and where some people think that The Secret is coming from is that I do believe that that prayer is important. I believe that, like, getting your mind right is important, and then I've never been, like, talking to my creator and had a bag of money fall out of the sky. Like, you got to get out and work. Like, you got to get out and do some things.
Maybe you just need a different creator.
Okay. I don't know.
I'm just throwing out ideas.
A little bit beyond the scope of this particular show.
I'm just throwing out ideas, you know, just trying to be out of the box. Anyway,
I think
you should write a book about all of this, Roger. Have you thought about writing a book about all of this?
You know, I have.
What did you name that book?
I named that book Train Your Brain for Success.
And where would I go to purchase such an item?
Yeah, if somebody wants to buy Train Your Brain for Success, you can find it on Amazon.com. We were really blessed that right out of the gates that book hit number one on Amazon, and it was awesome. It's continued to do well around the world. That's probably the easiest place to find it. You can also find it at BarnesandNoble.com or in any Barnes & Noble store. Or if somebody wants to get an autographed copy, go to www.deliverfreedom.com. There's a banner right on our homepage there. Click on that. That'll send an order directly to me, and I'll send out an autographed copy.
Now, who do you have to autograph that copy?
No, I'll personally autograph that copy.
Oh, it's a personally autographed copy. Oh, yep. I see. That's a totally different thing. I'd pay a lot more for that.
Well, I appreciate that.
And do you have classes that you teach online or just in person?
That's correct. We have we teach workshops on everything that we've discussed here today. And hey, by the way, all kidding aside, Jim, I really, really appreciate the fact that you've given this some thought. And I really appreciate the fact that we get to chat about this.
Hey, I'm fascinated by it. I can't wait to finish the book. And I think I do want to take some of the classes because I do need to work on some of these things. You know, I do have, I don't remember first names ever. You know, I've always just thought it was just the way I was, and I am fascinated to learn that I could do that. And so I am going to work through the whole process. I actually stopped at one of the quizzes because I didn't have time to actually sit through and take the test in your book. And so I'm right there on the cusp of a test right now. So I need to do that, and I'm fascinated by it. I really think that this is stuff that small business people need to know. And so go ahead and pitch the product that we can go and take some of the seminars from. How much are they?
If you want to find out about live workshops, it really depends on what people want to attend. People can invest anywhere between $20 a month to a few hundred dollars to a few thousand dollars, depending on where they want to take their business and what they want to do. If they want to check out live workshops or speaking engagements that we do, they would want to go to www.deliverfreedom.com. We teach workshops, and I have the opportunity to speak to organizations all over the country. That's the best way to find out. If you want to know what's going on with me, just check me out on Facebook or on LinkedIn. It's Roger Seip, last name spelled S-E-I-P. And if somebody's in some remote part of the world where they don't necessarily have great access to our live classes, all of our programs are available online at planetfreedom.com. Check out planetfreedom.com. Great way to have access right in your home to everything that we teach. And I appreciate the opportunity to put in that plug.
Yeah, someone needs to teach you how to plug during an interview, too.
Okay.
Roger, it was fantastic to have you with us today. I appreciate your time. I hope you have a beautiful day there in Wisconsin. I hope you sell a lot of books and make a lot of lives better. And the next time you are in the Deep South, give Kevin and I a call. Kevin is still trying to read with his computer with a sheet of paper over it, by the way.
So, put it down, Kevin. Put it down. Work on it when we're done.
All right. Roger, you've been fantastic. We appreciate your time. Have a wonderful day. This is Jim Beach for what show is this?
School for Startups Radio?
Or are we doing the restaurant show?
This is School for Startups.
School for Startups Radio. Thank you. And hope you have a great day. We will check you next Monday. Thanks a lot, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.